your speech in the Commons, it was very moving. And again, you're not the first MP to have spoken openly about this. And I suppose it's quite scary for those of us who haven't gone through this to understand that this is something that can happen to our loved ones without any consultation or any conversation even with the parents, the loved ones, the children or partners of people who are put on this pathway. Can you tell us a little bit about your story and what happened to you?
Yes, I can. First of all, I'd like to say that I believe that the original intentions of the Liverpool Care Pathway, which, as you say, are to bring hospice-style care into hospitals, are absolutely right. But it's the implementation of the Liverpool Care Pathway, as it's been rolled out, which means that things are causing concern. In the case of my family, my mother was in a nursing home after a brain operation, and she was put on a regime of reduced food and fluids. Now, there wasn't any consultation, certainly with myself or my sister. And I don't know with my father. He was then over 80 years old, but he certainly didn't talk to me about it. But all we knew was that they believed she was going to die and that this was the best thing to do for my mother.
Why would reducing food and fluids for an elderly lady be the best thing for her? I can't imagine any scenario in which that's the best thing for anybody.
Well, neither can I. And I think this is where one of the key lessons that we have to learn from my experience is that we need much better communication with patients and with their families. In actual fact, no one should be put onto the Liverpool Care Pathway without their consent, assuming that they're able to give it. But apparently a survey by Marie Curie in the Royal College of Physicians has discovered that half of those put on the LCP are in fact never told they are on such a pathway. And we're talking now about a total number of patients put on the pathway of 130,000 a year. So this is very concerning. And in fact, what happened with my mother was that it took weeks for her to pass away, which was terribly sad, agonising for her and heartrending for the family.
Was she, and it's a horrible question to ask anybody, but was she effectively starved to death?
After she died, I was racked with guilt that might have been the case, yes. And I thought I should have asked more questions. I should have protected her, or I should have at least prevented such a long degree of suffering. But of course, I have no medical background, and we do trust the medical profession.
Indeed.
And I think by and large in this country, of course, they all have the best intent for patients. But clearly with this particular pathway, and I have to say I'm assuming that my mother was on it, because I didn't even know the name of Liverpool Care Pathway until some considerable time afterwards.
Indeed, most of us, I think, only heard about it in the last few months.
Well, that's right. So communication, I think, is a real, real lesson that we have to learn. And I'm so glad this inquiry is taking place, because I think everyone agrees that communication for patients and relatives needs to be substantially improved.
Well, you were, I suppose, able to learn from the situation with your late mother when your 83-year-old father was also put on this pathway. Tell us more about that.
That's absolutely right. About 3 years later, and by this time I entered Parliament and I'd learned something of this pathway, and I in fact become vice chairman of the Dying Well All Party group in Parliament, which seeks to promote a good death for people, if we can use a phrase that's commonly coming into use now. So my father was taken into hospital because he was feeling unwell. He was in a few days. Illness wasn't diagnosed, but he's 83, and he was very frail. And I'd gone in every day, and after a few days, I asked a nurse in a corridor as we arrived, "Oh, how is he today?" And I was told, almost casually, with no consultation with me at all or discussion, "Oh, he's not very well. He's not long to live. We are putting him on the Liverpool Care Pathway."
Now, this was a conversation with a nurse in the corridor.
That's right. So by that time, I knew what the LCP meant, and I didn't want my father to suffer as my mother had. So I contacted my sister, and the very next day we moved him to a nursing home. There he was cared for. He started to eat well. He got better, and in fact, he over 6 months later, he is still alive. He's enjoying visits from his family. He's enjoying watching his football team, although not when they lose on the television as they did last Saturday.
He's alive and well. He's a man.
Yes, that's right. You know, he's able enough to discuss his finances intelligently. He's listening to music on tape. It's not a great quality of life, but it is a life, and it's very interesting that when his doctor in the care home said to him, you know, talk to me about your approach to life, and he said very clearly in exactly these words, I want to live. It might not be a great quality of life, but he wants to live. And had he remained in hospital, he wouldn't be with us now. So I think another lesson that we have to learn from my father's experience, and again, this is something that I'm very conscious of now, is about implementation. That if a decision is going to be made whereby someone's going to be put on the Liverpool care pathway, then not only should there be good communication with relatives, but the decision should be made by expertly trained senior clinicians. They ought to make that decision in consultation with someone who is experienced in palliative care, and they have to take full responsibility for the assessment, taking into account sensitively the whole of the patient's needs and understanding. And of course, had my father been asked, he wouldn't have wanted to go on the LCP. But this can be lacking where the LCP is being used as perhaps a tick box exercise.
We also hear there have been some criticisms and some campaigns by various newspapers claiming that this is actually a way of, this sounds so crass to put it to you, especially if you've gone through this, of stopping bed blocking, of basically, for want of a better phrase, killing off elderly patients to free up beds.
That is something which has certainly been expressed, that managerial pressures to reduce bed occupancy are a factor now, and I think that, as I say, whilst I have the utmost respect for the medical profession, I think it's absolutely critical that anyone whose elderly relative is going into hospital feels absolutely secure that is not a pressure. And so that's why it's so important that we have this inquiry to make sure that is not a factor. Non-clinical factors should not be a factor in decisions regarding the LCP.
Indeed, and yet all of us, I think, will feel differently and we about our own lives and indeed our elderly parents' lives when we unfortunately may have to face that scenario. We may feel, having had conversations with our loved ones, that they would not want to continue what might be perceived as more of an existence than living. But that's an individual decision that each individual must make and must talk about with their family members. And we must, as you say, not just communicate with the doctors and nurses, but communicate within families. But also, of course, I might sit there and think right now, at 44, pretty able-bodied, saying, oh, I wouldn't want to be spending months or years lying in a hospital bed, but actually, maybe come the time, I'll feel very differently. How do we ensure that people get the right care, and if it is a care that's going to lead to the end of life, the right kind of death?
Absolutely. This is so right. And that's why this constant review is so necessary. Constant communication and discussion. I think it's important for us to understand that actually even expert clinicians can't predict exactly what is going to happen with someone clinically in every case. The best guess is that in about 95% of cases, there's a probability that someone is dying. Mm-hmm. And the Liverpool care pathway, no one should be put on it unless they are imminently dying. People have talked to me about 36 hours being a good estimate for the length of life left. But even experts can't always get that right. That's why we need to constantly review once someone's put on the pathway. And there will always be somewhere between 2 and 5% of people where actually it isn't the right diagnosis, that the experts did get it wrong, and actually the person looks like they're rallying. If that's the case, then obviously they can be brought off it. But without constant monitoring and review by experts and constant communication insofar as this is possible, then we're missing that opportunity, which is so vital to make sure that the whole patient's needs are taken into account.
Can I ask?
Do
carry on. Apologies.
Well, I think what we're saying, and this was came out in the debate in Parliament, the original of the intent of the LCP, very good, and very many of us believe that it has a lot to offer, and we're very hopeful that as a result of the review, improvements can be made, standardised training across the country, standardised documentation to record the decisions that have been made, that can really give confidence to patients and their relatives that this is an approach that is in the best interests of anyone who's in their last days. We want people to feel comfortable. Why put people through extra agony through, having intravenous pipes inserted into them or whatever? If actually it's not really going to help, why give them more drugs which are going to perhaps extend their life by a very short period of time but mean that they're unable to communicate with their relatives in the last hours of life?
When they could have a peaceful last few hours.
Peaceful,
but as you say,
dignified,
if it ends up being a very painful few weeks, then we're in a very different sort of scenario.
Absolutely. And I think that the independent public inquiry, which the Minister Norman Lamb, Health Minister Norman Lamb, has now decided to open up as a result of concerns which have been raised by myself and by others, is absolutely the right way forward. I think we can see real improvements could well come out of this in terms of communication, implementation, documentation, review and training.
Indeed.
And let's hope that's the case.
Well, I think we all very much hope so. Thank you so much, Fiona Bruce, for talking to us. A very difficult subject for you to tackle, both in Parliament and on radio.